Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of the Corner Store Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Koval. Each week, we bring you some incredible creatives and artists and organizers and curators from Chicago and beyond. And today is no different. We have such an powerful and important gatherer of art and a curator of space, an incredible gallerist. We have Monique Meloche in the Corner Store. Welcome, Monique.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, I'm so excited to chat with you because I've been in your space a ton of times, and you've had a few different iterations of a space, and so I'm wondering, first of all, just tell us where you are at now, and then I want to go back and kind of get into the history of how you've began to build spaces.
Sure. So I'm sitting here in my office at our gallery space in West Town. We're located at 451 North Helena. And we moved here the summer of 2018. So this is actually our fourth and largest location. So it's like finally, we've bopped around from the West Fulton Market to the West Loop to, Wicker Park, Bucktown, now here. And we were finally able to find a great space to have a solid amount of exhibition space, but really a lot of our own infrastructure with appropriate storage and meeting spaces and a loading dock and all of these wonderful things that, we had all desired previously for our gallery spaces. And we are 100% loving it here. It's just such a great location.
So of course, for almost half a third of that time, it's been during the in shelter. How has that affected, space where people gather to not only convene, but also view art and have programs and all of this stuff?
Yeah, it was super interesting because we were all, we were all in New York doing the art fairs in early March of last year, and flew home and was like, okay, lockdown a couple days later. We were very fortunate because our first exhibition of the year was closing in a week, so we really only lost that 1 week. And the next exhibition was planned to open in late March, early April. Obviously, we had to close that down, but it was Nate Young, who is a artist based here in Chicago. So after we, all went home and started working remotely and, just figuring out what was happening, we realized that, even if people couldn't come back in the gallery, that we could actually just put on the show. And if we got a really great video of the artist walking through the show and explaining that, which we had never done for any other exhibitions, we could provide some content that wasn't just in everybody's living room or kitchen, right? And so it was kind of comical because it was like the artist, rented a truck. My husband and I, met him all masked up at the gallery. I had the drill in my hand. My husband had the level. We put up the show ourselves, and we didn't want anybody else to get potentially exposed. And it was really rewarding. The video was wonderfully received, and we have now since continually made videos, even though people are allowed to come back in, but obviously people aren't traveling. But that's kind of one of the COVID silver linings, is that, there is this virtual component that we didn't even think about, that is just going to now live on forever as a wonderful archival record of these exhibitions. So, and we were ultimately able to shift some of our summer programming, and we did open Nate Young's show to the public for 2 weeks. And I will tell you, we were booked solid for those 2 weeks. We did 45-minute appointments, no more than four people in at a time. It's like museum directors, curators, collectors, other artists. And it was like everyone's first outing beyond the grocery store. People were so excited to tell me that they actually put on a real outfit to go out somewhere. But the most important was that everyone wanted to stay even beyond the 45 minutes. And it wasn't just I have to be around people. They were really engaging with the art. And so I feel it's caused this really wonderful slowdown, which we all needed. And it got back to like the real core of, you know, why I got into this, because I do love art and I love talking about art and I love looking at art. And, you know, yes, I miss getting on planes and doing art fairs and all of that stuff, but just to be able to, you know, just, that's all we were doing is just like talking to people all day. Like I wasn't even sitting at my desk. It was marvelous.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's you know, tragic in some ways, but crisis certainly breeds ingenuity. And I'm wondering if there are other practices, because I one of the things I've been struck by is how the visual art community has gone into 3D gallery spaces and, you know, some of the places that I would go to normally. Sure, it's not the same, but I still have a viewing experience that, you know, is I'm very grateful for. What are there other things that you've kind of conceived of, figured out, will retain as a practice moving forward?
That's definitely number one.
Yeah.
Number two, you know, we've been, forced to do virtual art fairs virtually instead of being in person. And we did, I think, 7 virtual art fairs in 2020, which is like more than what I normally do, even like on a physical scale. So, we progressively got better. Like the art fair platforms have gotten better. The galleries have figured out, you know, what's the best way to show things and what things just can't be shown that way. And then I think the audience has also learned that you're not going to go through 200 galleries. You're going to do what you do when you go to a regular art fair and maybe pick a dozen that you really want to hit. But what we did for during Art Basel Miami in December, what we decided, we're like, okay, well, we can't do an art fair, but the artist still made the work. So I still paid to ship everything here, and we set up our art fair booth in our back viewing room. And then every single morning at 10 a.m. during the 6 days of the fair, I would do like a quick 30-minute Instagram live of me with the art, you know, in my booth with the the artist in their studio, and got this really great one-on-one feedback. And so everybody after those has asked if we would continue in some way of like making that into our program. So we're trying to figure that out in a little more regular basis, because it's so nice. Everyone wants to hear the artist's voice. You know, they don't want to hear me just talking about it if the artist is available and can talk about their work. And so I think that like doing those sorts of things with a little more frequency and not having it be such a like, oh, this is like a, you know, register for this Zoom sort of thing. Like I love that it was just, you know, boom, it's Instagram Live. Some people know it. Some people stumble upon it. And so I think those sort of things we're definitely going to keep doing.
That's really cool. How is the art market now during this time? Is it better? I mean, have you been selling more, less? Is it like where are you at, and where's the market at, I guess, during this time?
The market for contemporary art continues to be strong throughout this whole period. You know, yes, there was some weirdness with having to be closed down, but in the reality of it, galleries are one of the easiest spaces to reopen, because other than at an opening reception, you never have more than a couple people mingling around a gallery at the time. So even though, like, you know, people have to schedule appointments and whatnot, it hasn't stopped people from coming. And we were definitely more busy than we were last year. I don't know the final numbers. I mean, we had a good year, and I paid a lot of artists, and you know, so they were able to keep doing what they were doing. And we feel super fortunate. And we did, the fairs have been a little iffy, but by the time Basel Miami came around in December, it was the closest thing to being a real fair. And I feel that we actually probably sold as much, if not more, than what we would have in person. Not to very many new collectors, though. That's the thing. Like we're not meeting a ton of new people, because there's no, you know, sense of discovery when you just stumble across a booth of, you know, of a gallery you don't know or an artist that you don't know. So that we're kind of missing that, but we're very thrilled that we're okay, and we didn't have to lay off anyone, and we're, you know, we Everybody has been even putting in more hours. So, you know, we're super thankful.
No, that's great. That's great. And great because it, you know, to be able to continue to, you know, be a source of income for artists, a gathering space for, you know, fans, other artists, collectors, people who love the work is, you know, so essential, particularly it seems in these times. I want to go back and just, you know, talk about and ask you, how did you even get interested in being a gallerist, in curating, in contemporary and visual art? Like, where does that all come from?
It comes from a very strange place because, you know, I did not grow up in, you know, like a very serious art appreciating family. I didn't even know what an art gallery was until I got to the University of Michigan, which is where I went to undergrad. And, you know, I was aware of museums, but again, like my family wasn't a family that went there. We, you know, on some school trips, you know, I went into undergrad as a pre-law student, and I had a really, really great advanced placement humanities class in high school. And Mrs. Rose, I don't even know if she's still around, but she's the whole reason for this, because like maybe 1 or 2 weeks of this humanities course was in art history. And those 2 weeks of sitting in a darkened room, looking at slides, I mean, which kind of gives you a little hint of what years we're talking about, a little few years ago.
That's right.
But like that really stayed with me. And so my freshman year, I was like, oh, like art history 101 is an elective. Let's do this. And after my first semester, I was on the phone to my dad in Canada, which is where I'm from. And I said, you know, my dad's a car dealer and he's, you know, like he knows a lot about art now, but he definitely did not then. And I didn't even know what I would do with an art history degree. I just thought like, I found my passion. This is what I want to do. So I got my degree and I moved back to Toronto between undergrad and grad school. And I worked at a contemporary Canadian gallery. But again, like that was because that was the only job I could get. And, thankfully I did, because the person I worked for there ended up moving to Chicago 6 months before me, and she helped me get my first job in Chicago. So it's like those networking things
are real
yes. And helpful, but,
don't burn bridges, I guess is one of the,
definitely. Yeah. But I moved to Chicago because I was, accepted in grad school, and I got my master's in art history and theory at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. And while I was there, like in my first semester, this former colleague from Toronto said, hey, the Museum of Contemporary Art is looking for an auction assistant. And I was like, okay, well, I don't know anything about auctions either, you know? So, but it was like a museum job. And I got the job, and I parlayed that 3 months into 6 years of full-time employment. And the last 3 years was as an assistant curator. So that's where I thought I was going to be. I thought I was going to be in academia, in the curatorial side. I had also, I was teaching part-time at the School of the Art Institute in the art history department as well. So this was like my whole model. And then like the opportunity for advancement in the institution kind of was coming to an end. And I'm like, okay, I love Chicago. I don't want to move. And so I was like, what do I do? So I reached out to Rona Hoffman, who has Rona Hoffman Gallery for over 40 years. Fine, fierce woman. And you know, I knew who she was. I knew the artist she was dealing with because they showed at the museum. I knew her clientele locally because they were like on the board of trustees. So I was like, okay, I'm already in this thing. Like not really knowing much, but I took her out to lunch and I convinced her to let her director go and to hire me and be like, okay, I'm going to come in. I'm going to like curate for you. And that's before like galleries have ever had curators, because this is back in like 97. And, you know, I'll bring some like fresh young artists to the program. And, you know, so which she did, she let me do this. She like even like helped facilitate me mounting my thesis was the history of the shoe in contemporary art. So she even like helped me mount this crazy show that had Warhols and Gary Simmons and Doris Salcedo and Ed Paschke and Wayne Thiebaud. And like, it was wild.
Yeah.
And I learned so much. And so she's totally like my PhD in gallery, if you could even get that, right? And so I really, really learned a lot. And, she's a real tough woman to work for, and, which she acknowledges to this day. I learned a lot about the gallery world, and I really kind of learned a lot how I wanted to manage things. And after 2 years, it was kind of time to move on. And then at that time, Kavi Gupta, who has his gallery in Chicago for many years, his gallery was just really young. It was only 4 years old. It was then called Vedanta Gallery. He was only dealing with, contemporary Indian artists. And so he's like, look, come on board. Let's like revamp the program. I'm really interested in contemporary. And hey, I just like bought this building on Washington Street, and I'm going to be, dealing with the construction. So why don't you whip the gallery into shape? And I'm like, wow, this is like the best opportunity, because I don't have any of the financial concerns other than being like fiscally responsible, but like I get to make all of these great artistic decisions. So I was there for about a year and a half, and then like the new building was done, and he's like, okay, yeah, so I'm now going to jump back in and take charge of everything. And so the next move was definitely like, yeah, I'm not taking a back seat. And so I decided like, okay, let's just throw your hat in the ring. And that was like summer of 2000, and by the fall I actually I opened like unofficially in my home with a show called Homewrecker, and I had 30 artists with over 90 artworks throughout all three floors of the building. 350 people showed up on opening night. It was insane. I wanted it up for a month. After like a month or two, museum groups started asking if they could like bring tourists through. And finally my husband's like, hold up. I don't want people sitting on our bed watching video art in the middle, like on Saturday when I come home from the gym.
Yeah.
So he helped find that first space, which was in Fulton Martin, like right on Fulton, when it was just me and the meatpackers.
Right. Wow. Well, I wanna get to your purview and what you look for and the artists that you work with, but I want to take you back and ask you a question about that humanities class, in those 2 weeks. Like, do you remember what artists or what was it that drew you in that way to this whole life?
I have to tell you, that's such a good question. And I have not one recollection of like exactly what it was. My, best guess would be that like they showed some Renaissance art. Like, it was definitely not contemporary.
Right.
I ended up doing a semester abroad in Italy. And so Bernini is like my favorite artist of all time. So I feel like that's just been like ingrained in there. I wish I knew what they were. But it wasn't like she showed a Warhol or something. At that time, the art history books only went up to like 1965 or something, the contemporary was still being written into the history books.
Yeah, no, that's cool. So, okay. So, so obviously now so we're talking, would you say 2000 is when you had the home show, or when
2000 was the Homewrecker show. Yes. And then 2001 is when I officially opened my brick and mortar space.
Right. Okay. So we're talking, this is 21 years of, your own space.
Yeah.
What can you tell it? Like, what is the curatorial mission? Like, who do you want to show? Who do you show? What's the kind of heart of your gallery?
So, we work with living artists. We have historically worked a lot with artists very much at the beginning of their careers, growing their careers. Now, like, that was just by, I had no money to pay for shipping and whatever at the beginning. And it was just like, oh, look at you. You're at the School of the Art Institute. Want to come play? And, that sort of thing. But I still have some of those artists who have been with me since the beginning as well. I opened the gallery with a very curatorial mission. I knew that it was a business, but I thought that like we could be a space to provide like young or mid-career artists who weren't quite ready for that museum stage, this place to do ambitious projects. And so my very first show was by Joel Ross, and it was titled, I Borrowed My Mother's Bedroom. And he literally went down to Texas and he dismantled his mother's bedroom and took everything. And her underwear and her, like the ceiling fan and the door and, it was recreated three-dimensionally to scale in the middle of my space. And the checklist just said price, ask Joel's mother. Cause certainly it wasn't even for sale. And, people thought it was a little bit of a crazy move. But yeah. I'm just like, this is like, I want to, this is what I'm telling you. Like we can do a balance. And there was a series of photographs that was not of the bedroom, but it was like a different series that Joel did that we did have for sale. So we were actually selling things from the beginning. But I wanted to put that stamp out there. Like we're always going to be that gallery. It's not just like what can like move from my walls onto your walls. We're going to continue to show challenging work. You know, I love deep conceptual thinkers and artists. I like a really, really serious dedication to craft. And that's not, it's, if you look at my roster, that goes, you know, far across the board. But there's definitely this kind of, maybe, and it's not all Midwestern, but there's this Midwestern work ethic that goes into a lot of the work. Like it makes sense to me. Not that I was like this mandate, but if you kind of look historically at my program, you know, we've had a diverse roster. You know, we've worked with many artists of color, a very good equal ratio of male to female, you know, with all, you know, sorts of diversity in the mix. And so I'm very proud that that's been something that's been there since the beginning, because right now it's just like, so, you know, of the moment, if your gallery does not have like, you know, an artist of color who makes figurative paintings, then like you've somehow missed the boat. Right. And,
you've been there.
I'm happy to have done that for such a long time, where I'm just like, now like everybody else is catching up, and like, it's like, yeah, see, I told you so. Like when that painting was $7,500, you probably should have bought it from me then, because it's not anymore. So.
Right. And who are some of the folks that you've worked with, or I guess, obviously on your website, you have, you know, your roster, and it's beautiful. Some of my favorite contemporary artists are, you know, some of the folks you work with, but, who have you worked with, and like, who are some of the folks that you've just worked with historically?
Yeah. So, Rashid Johnson is probably one of the best known artists on my roster. His first show with me was in 2003, but we started working together in 2001, right when I had opened. And he actually approached me saying, like, I want you to represent me. And this is what's going to be. And I said to him, all right. Like, at that point, he had only had his undergraduate degree from Columbia. He was in a, like, you know, big show at the Studio Museum. He was on the cover of Vibe magazine. He was thinking he was all that. And I was like, all right, you go to grad school and I'll give you a show. So like 2 years later, we did have our first show. So that's been really wonderful to see his career blossom. Incredible. Because like that's a case in point, right? Like he, you know, young artist, we did four shows before he ever kind of like really blew up, outside of Chicago. And, you know, and it's with the, you know, and it's with the intention of all the artists that I want to work with, is like, it's from being the incubator space here into the museums. Like, those are the types of artists I want to work with. And so, like, Rashid's an incredible example of that.
Right, yeah.
Ebony G. Patterson, who
so good.
Is an artist from Jamaica, who now lives and works in Chicago.
I know!
But she's not in Jamaica, so that's very exciting. We have her next exhibition opening here in April. Wow. And, we've watched her it's really, you know, she makes all of these incredible like tapestry and mixed media and paperworks. She's got a solo show up right now at the Contemporary Art Museum in St. Louis. That's traveling to the ICA in San Jose. She's going to be in the Liverpool Biennial in a couple months, whenever London can reopen or England can reopen. And then Amy Sherald is an artist who we started working with. I mean, many people know her as the artist who painted Michelle Obama's portrait. And we were working with her well before that. And we were even involved behind the scenes in seeing that happen. So that's been an incredible...
That's momentous. I mean, that's a big moment for art, period, right?
Yeah.
Much less to be involved
with. It's a game changer. Like, the fact that, like, The 24 hours around that reveal of those portraits, it was like the entire world is looking at contemporary art right now. And like that has never happened before. So that is, That's somebody, Maya Cruz Palaleo, who is based in New York. She is of Filipino descent and actually hails from Chicago, but I never knew her. She was like here as a child. And so she's our next show upcoming in March. An incredible painter of kind of like magical realism and like pulling from her own, pulling from the past of her own family's history, but diving in deep to the kind of like colonial tragedies of the Philippines. And she did a ton of research here in Chicago at the Newberry Library, which who knew has one of this country's foremost archive of Filipino documents and photos and paintings and
great.
Totally
amazing.
Crazy.
I love the Newberry. So that's amazing.
I know. Yeah. I know. I'm hoping that maybe we'll get somebody like when the show's going on that we can do some sort of like online chat between her and somebody from that archive, which
that's
I
great.
Think would be pretty cool.
Great idea.
We just added two new artists to the roster, Jake Troily and Kajal. Two painters, Jake now here in Chicago. He just graduated last year from University of Southern Florida in Tampa. And so I was very happy that, he moved here. Not only did he move here, he moved on my block. So I literally like run by him every morning. And then Ebony lives about four blocks away. So it's quite funny that we're all in this together. And then Kajal, an incredible painter who is, looking at the history of Blackamoor sculptures from like 17th, 18th, 19th century Europe and kind of like, taking them out of their troubled past and like making them into these kind of like majestic scholars and alchemists and oracles. And he's now kind of moving on to this like little bit of a sci-fi realm. So I'm like, I see a little Wakanda getting in there. So we'll see. So
cool.
Very excited about that. And then, we've got some new young artists that we've never worked with that later this year, we've decided that we're going to start, giving over part of our viewing room in the back to introduce some new younger voices. So Nereida Patricia, who is an artist based here in Chicago that I discovered at the MCA in like they opened that A Long Dream show, which is this like massive, massive kind of like COVID era show that was open for a week before they had to close down again. But I'm happy that I went and I discovered her work and did an online studio visit. And so she's agreed to show work with us this summer. And then Destiny Belgrave, who's a young artist in New York, she'll be doing something with us in the fall in the back room. And then Ariel Daniel. And then these are like all kind of people that we've been discovering over the past year. So
yeah,
I'm excited to
add
their voices to the mix.
Yeah. So do you think, you mentioned the Amy Sherald moment, but do you think just in general, Has contemporary art kind of crossed over into pop dominant culture in a way that maybe we haven't seen 10 years ago? Like, are we in a kind of a sort of renaissance, for this space and for the spaces that you've been responsible for building?
I definitely think so. I mean, we lend artwork to be on the set of Empire. We lend artwork to be in like Steve McQueen's movies. And, so it's like when those things start happening, and then you also just have, obviously too, with the advent of and the popularity of Instagram, and it's like you have people like Swizz Beatz and Beyonce and Jay-Z, in the music industry. And then you have professional athletes, and you have those people, posting their new pics on the gram. Like it is so broad reaching. It's kind of unbelievable. Like Swizz Beatz bought one of Kajal's paintings from our show.
Wow, right.
And like, we've sold to him before. He's a big longtime supporter of Ebony Patterson. But it's like, he buys it, he posts it, and then, we have 1,000 more followers instantaneously. Like, it's like that, that outreach is very real and very large. And, these people are serious. These are not, they're building very serious, real collections that are that are museum worthy in themselves. So, I definitely see it. And I've been seeing, we've actually cultivated a lot of new, younger collectors during COVID. which has been nice. I mean, you know, the people are just sitting in their homes, staring at their walls, and being like,
I should have something.
If you're not interested in it, it's really easy to get addicted. So.
Right. So, you know, because, you know, as you'd said too, like, you know, working with so many of the artists that you've worked with, having the curatorial perspective that you've had, it has been maybe consciously, not consciously, in contrast to how some museum spaces and some gallery spaces have been limited. They've been inaccessible to a diversity of artists, and then therefore also a diversity of publics. Mm-hmm. How conscientious have you been about that continued diversity, and how, as a at least passing white person, a Canadian, you know, in the space, like, how do you develop, you know, that insistence of a curatorial practice?
I mean, it's, you know, What I show in my gallery is also very reflected in what our, you know, my husband and I, our personal collection is, which is just like skewed a lot over the years, very naturally, to supporting a lot of artists of color, not 100% across the board, but it just knocks us over our head every time. And it's just something that speaks to us, and that, and I think that, we are a very particularly friendly gallery, and some galleries, I think most Chicago galleries are generally pretty friendly, but, you know, the gallery world in general gets a pretty bad rap, but for good reason, because most of the times, you know, it's like, if you aren't known to them, or if you're not dressed the proper way or whatever it is, you know, you get the cold shoulder, or you get nothing. And, we believe in talking to everybody, and, you know, whether it's a student or whether it's, you know, a 90-year-old grandmother, right? Like, it's like, we're not, you know, a very small percentage of people who actually come in my gallery actually buy art. So, like, you know, we're also like an exhibition space. And, we have been building a really, really good, great group of young artists of collectors of color, who have also just like, you know, they're like, you know, man, we have just been treated with disrespect in other spaces. And so, you know, it's like, and then they'll come back the week later, and like on their phone, they'll be FaceTiming with their friend in Philly being like, you should buy one of these paintings, man. And so, like, it's been great. And I'm not like, you know, I'm not, all I'm doing is presenting my program and doing what I do. And so I feel that, like, you know, there are more conversations that are being had, and they're like, there's different platforms, and a lot of like these younger collectors are talking to each other, and you know, they're just deciding to, like, you know, kind of like, they want to go where they're like, they like what they see, and they like that they're being supported, and they want to support us in turn.
That's great. Well, I really appreciate the work that you do, both in the city, but obviously, you know, the reverberations you have around the world, and the artists that you show and support, and just the space you provide is really essential. So, you know, thank you so much, and thank you so much for being in the Corner Store. Where can people stay in tune with all of what you're doing?
Well, you can go on our website, which is just MoniqueMelosh.com. Our Instagram is at Monique Melosh, and we're on Facebook too, but not very much. That's basically it. And then if you just email info@MoniqueMelosh.com or call us at 312-243-2129, you can schedule an appointment. We're here Tuesday through Saturday from 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. And we're scheduling like 30-minute appointments. And we've got a lot of availability. Our Ben Murray show is up until the 13th of February. And we would love to see you.
Great. Monique, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Shout out our super producer, DJ Cashera. Big up boss man, Todd Manley. Thank you to our official Corner Store photog, Mercedes Zapata. Salutes to the Snack Door, Max. Also, please, y'all, follow our Instagram. It's corner_pod on IG, on Twitter. Tell us who you want to see in the Corner Store. And also, please consider dropping
a couple of dollars into our Patreon account. It's patreon.com/cornerstore_pod.
The Corner Store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.